Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be in a room with so many beautiful, astute people. I know you're astute because you will quickly recognize that I am not Beth Wessel. Beth, of course, is the current president of the Forum Club. I am last year's news, Ed Liddy, and Beth asked if I could please fill in for her today, and I'm delighted to do it. But we have a very nice program today. I think you will enjoy it. I know you'll enjoy it much better if you silence your cell phones, turn off your watches if they buzz, and anything else that you have on you that can cause disturbances, we'd appreciate it if you'd turn it off. I want to give you a preview of coming attractions. Our next gathering is on February 16th, and again, that's a change from the program, the tickets that you originally got. It's not a change recently, but it's February 16th. It's at the Naples Grand. And it will feature former two-time U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr. So it'll be another good session. But please mark your calendars. The date is the 16th. It's not the 9th, which was our originally scheduled date. I would like to introduce Reverend Mark Caldwell from the North Naples Church, who's going to come up and give us an invocation. Reverend?
Thank you so much. Last year, on a Sunday morning, I was driving to church. Goodlet Frank was empty. As I was pulling into the church, a motorist drove by me blowing his horn, and I thought, who in the world would be blowing their horn at someone on a Sunday morning on an empty road? Well, I looked over to my side, a little bit incensed, only to see my colleague and my friend Kurt Anderson on the way to his own church at Naples Community Church downtown, and he was just blowing to say good morning. Kurt also invited me to my first forum lunch last year, and I had an absolutely delightful time as a guest, and that's why it's an honor and a real privilege for me to be able to open up this group with prayer this afternoon. So let's pray. Almighty God, I thank you so much for this time of the year where we are reunited with friends that might come here for the season, individuals that come to visit us from places that are much colder and farther away. We also get to have groups like this, where we can come to share, to grow, to learn, and also to see what we can continue to see happen in life. And I pray that you might continue to bless this group, the fellowship, and this lunch now that we come to share. We pray this in your name. Amen.
All right. Thank you again. All right, Kurt, lay off the horn. All right, on Sunday mornings, lay off the horn. I would like to introduce Jamie Anderson. Jamie chairs our student guest committee and is responsible for getting the two high schools here. So she's going to introduce the folks from Immokalee and Lely High School. Jamie.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today we are in for a treat because we are welcoming Immokalee High School. Immokalee serves 2,052 students. Its mission is to promote educational excellence that prepares students to be college and career ready. The school offers career academies in engineering, finance, and information technology. The students are joined by their guidance counselor, Jake Simmons, and are sponsored by John Lawson. Thank you, John. Thank you, Jake, for being here. Please welcome the Immokalee High School Indians.
Good afternoon. Hi, my name is Miguel Gaspar. I am from Immokalee High School. I am a senior. Growing up, it was tough for me because I live in a single parent household, which is my father. You know, he raised me, and throughout time, I would always consistently see him struggle with finance, like his financial status. So he would work every single day. He works for like a landscape company, and every day he would just work, and he would like encourage me to also work as well. And like his paycheck, he would use it just to buy expenses, you know, just for our our needs. And like seeing him like struggle, like just made me want to help him, have the desire to really assist him in anything that I could possibly do. So I plan on pursuing accounting at the University of North Florida. I'm taking a college course in Mockley Technical College, and so you know I'm learning the basics of accounting. So that's what I hope to pursue. I'm also involved into other clubs such as Lighthouse and Key Club. So basically, those are organizations where we assist like throughout the community. So we just like volunteer and just do that around the Mockley. So I just plan on doing that. I'm also involved into sports and such as like cross country and track. So that's what I do. So I work every day as well. I'm also in a Guadalupe Center. So they are a program where they assist students similar to me and who are in a similar situation. And we just, they prepare us for college, and what we want to pursue. But we also tutor students around the Mockley, like in elementary school, such as Highlands Elementary, Eden Park Elementary, Village Oaks Elementary. So we just help those students and just tutor them with like their homework, with their schoolwork. And we also have like fun activities where they could participate in. So we just truly spend time with them, get to know them, and help them build the confidence where they, they feel like home and like just want to be in school and just really like, want to be a better person, as they grow up. So that's what I'm a part of. And I also hope like once I get my degree in accounting is to help out the community, because I've seen like businesses go out of business because of their like financial issues. Like recently, a couple years, it was Taco Bell. So I heard that, they were having financial issues. So then they ended up running out of business. So we no longer have a Taco Bell. Instead, we have a KFC where they, they sell chicken. So, yes. Sorry, I'm kind of nervous, but if you couldn't tell. So I just hope to, really assist businesses as well, not only my family, because I really want to help out the community. Because I know there's families out there that either are in my situation, living in a family where there's just one person as, head of house. And also there's families where there's worse. So I just want to, bring that support, bring that assistance to, families, in my position. So that's what I hope and desire, hopefully. Yeah. And thank you for having me. Enjoy your lunch and have a good day. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Gerardo Camposano and I'm from Immokalee High School. I'm a senior. I'm very passionate about art, and I've been passionate about art since I was a little kid. And it's something that I want to pursue in the future. And I'm planning to go to college and pursue graphic design because of my love for art. I want to be able to do something that I love, not necessarily because I have to do it, but because I want to do it. So that's what I want to do for my future, and that's what I want to continue to pursue. I already have many approvals from places like FGCU, St. John's University, Arcadia University, and I just need help choosing. Thank you for having me.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Liliana Carana Gonzalez, and I'm a senior from Immokalee High School. I'm currently involved in the yearbook where we design pages for the yearbook, and we take pictures of clubs and sports going around campus. And then I work on Monday through Friday after school helping tutor kids in second grade from the Guadalupe Center. Which is how I knew my passion was working with kids, and that is why I want to major in elementary education. I'm currently got accepted to various schools. There's two that really interest me, one out of state and one in state. I got accepted into North Central, and I also got accepted to FGCU, and I'm just considering which one is the best fit for me. I'm thankful for having me here.
Good afternoon. My name is Mildred Hinojosa. I am a senior at Immokalee High School. I'm also within the Immokalee Foundation, and as a part of the foundation, I'm also with the Immokalee Readers Program, which is an after-school program that helps tutor elementary school students. As a student with the Immokalee Foundation, I am part of the Loud House Club, a student-run club, the National Honor Society, and the Debate Club. I am also a dual enrollment student with Florida Southwestern State College, and I've been accepted into FGCU, Go Eagles. And my career goal is to major in preclinical laboratory science and work here in Southwest Florida, as a clinical laboratory science within any hospital. Thank you for having me.
We love that school pride. Go Eagles. Our second school is Laley High School. Laley students, you can join us up here. Laley serves 1,502 students and provides opportunities for lifelong learning, critical thinking, and problem solving. Their mission statement is learning for all, whatever it takes. The students are joined by their guidance counselor, Liz Brewer, and are sponsored by Doug Johnson. Thank you to the Johnsons that are both here today, and to Liz. Please welcome the Laley Trojans.
Good afternoon. My name is Colin Raymond. I'm a senior at Laley High School, and something that I want to pursue when I get older is I want to be a sports medicine physician, and just mainly in sports medicine. And I want to pursue a major in kinesiology at the University of Florida. Some things that I do in my school, I'm a quarterback and a captain on the varsity football team, senior class president at the school, and participate in many different clubs, including National Honor Society, Spanish Honor Society, DECA, FCA, and student government. And as far as community service goes, I'm an altar server at my San Marco Catholic Church. I'm a co-administrator for the Optimist Club Flag Football League, where I ref, administrate, do stuff for the kids. And I'm also a beach attendant at water sports at Hilton and Crystal Shores on Marco Island. So I would like to go into the University of Florida, but then if I don't get into the University of Florida, I'd like to take an advantage of one of my offers from football and hopefully pursue an athletic and academic career in football. So I'd like to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I'd like to thank the Hilton, and I'd like to thank the Forum Club for hosting this luncheon for us. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Distel. I'm a senior at Laley High School. Oops, sorry. I think I broke the mic, guys. I'm originally from Madrid, Spain. My father is from Germany, and after I was born in Spain, I moved to Germany, where I lived for 8 years. I attended an English military base where I learned English. My mom was a civilian in the military, and she was a teacher there. After living there for 8 years, I moved to Florida, where I've lived for the last 8.5 years. I've applied to many in-state colleges, such as University of Florida, UCF, USF, basically every single college in Florida. And I've also applied to many out-of-state colleges. My number one choice, if I would get in with the University of Florida, I'd pursue a degree in business marketing. My father did something in a similar area, so I feel like I'd have good guidance in that area. Some of the stuff I like to do in my free time is I take a lot of pride in school spirit. So I participate in, for example, this year I participated in the varsity cross country team, varsity basketball team, and the varsity tennis team, all of which I was the captain of. I'm also, I also partake in many clubs such as DECA, Spanish NHS, same clubs as Colin does, so NHS and the Superintendent Advisory Board. I also, in my seventh period, I like to volunteer with the special needs program and try to assist as much as I can over there. And yeah, thank you guys for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Oh my goodness. Good afternoon. My name is Kaylin Burt, and I'm a senior at Lely High School. Next year, I will be attending Texas Christian University, where I'll be continuing my academic and swimming career. And I'm planning on majoring in business and marketing. Throughout the past 4 years at Lely High School, I have been a part of the swimming and diving team, where I have been a captain for the past 2 years. I qualified for the state competition all 4 years and medaled the past 2 years. And this year, I placed second in the 50 freestyle and third in the 100 freestyle at the state competition. I have also been a part of Lely Student Government all 4 years, and this year I have been elected the Vice President of the Student Government Association, as well as the Vice President of Lely High School's chapter of the National Honor Society. As well as that, I have also been elected President of Lely High School's chapter of DECA. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity and all of the opportunities I've received through Lely High School, and thank you so much.
Hello, everybody. I'm very excited to be here today. Thank you for having me. My name is Sophia Friedhoff, and I'm a senior at Lely, and I'm very, very excited to be here today. Some notable contributions that I've made at school and throughout my community include volunteering with Gulf Coast Runners and being a part of Meals of Hope, where I distribute and pack foods for people in our community. While in school, I'm currently holding officer positions in numerous clubs, such as DECA, where I'm the vice president, and National Honor Society as a senior parliamentarian, Spanish National Society as a secretary and vice president of the student council. I also participate as team captain for two varsity sports at my school, which include cross country and track and field. And there I have made it to the state competition a couple of times as well. With that, I'm very happy to say that I will be attending the University of Miami, go Canes, and I'll be studying finance and business administration. This passion really came from my dad. Every day when I came home at 4 o'clock, I'd see him watching the closing bell in the stock market. So I always was interested in that. So with this path, I hope to find a career in investment banking and private equity. Thank you so much for this opportunity today.
Please continue with your lunches, and I'd like to move the program along. It's now my pleasure to introduce our host, who will introduce our speaker. Michael Farr is no stranger to this group. He's been associated with the Forum Club for a long time in various capacities, but he does have a day job. And his day job is he's CEO and founder of Farr Miller in Washington. He's the basically runs a firm, oversees the day-to-day activities. Prior to that, he was a principal with Alex Brown and Sons. You know him not just from his appearances at the Forum Club, but also he's been on numerous television shows, The Today Show and Good Morning America, NBC Nightly News, Bloomberg TV. I could go on and on. He is a proficient author, has published about four or five books, all of which are a very interesting read. He does so much in the community, and I will do him a disservice by not listing it all because I'd be up here for about 10 minutes. But he's very active in the community, very active with the hospital, very active with where he went to school, the University of the South, and he's going to be very active here introducing our speaker. Michael.
Thank you. Nice to see everybody again. And what a great, this is a big crowd. This is terrific. Thank you, Ellie. God, I don't know how she does this, but thank you, Ellie. What a treat for today to have my friend Michael Schwimmer here. You know, Schwimmer's like the kid next door. No, he's not. If the kid next door was 6'8", an amazing athlete and smart as hell, then he's like the kid next door. In high school as a pitcher, he was 9-0. He played varsity basketball, football, and baseball, and was an honor student. The thing, one of the things you will see as he talks to you today, that he is a really engaging, just amazingly nice guy. I mean, this is a guy you're going to sit and say, I want to go spend more time with him afterwards. I wonder where he's having a beer tonight. He'll tell you, by the way. That's kind of who he is. But for our students here today, he's also going to tell you about the importance of his focus on his academics. His athleticism opens certain doors. Right? And then his ambition and his tenacity and his education got him even further. Can you imagine getting full scholarships and offers to go to college to play football, to play basketball, and to play baseball? Because he did. It's just like Joe Fogg. They're like twins, really. Twins, Joe. He could be here. You should get up. If he misses a spot, Joe, you could get up and fill in here for him. When Michael played for the Phillies and was a pitcher in the professional leagues, he hurt his shoulder, and he always had this idea. He always thought about the statistics of all the kids in the minor leagues who were now playing in the majors. And if he could get all of those statistics for those major league players when they were in the minor leagues, and run them through a computer AI program, he could come up, he thought, with predictive analysis using AI to figure out which kids in the minors would make it into the majors. Furthermore, that he could predict how much money they would make, and then he could go to those kids in the minors and say, hey, why don't I pay you this for the next few years, and I want this percentage of your major league earnings. And it worked, and he's killing it. And now he's taking it to a whole new level. And I know you're thinking, if he's going to give the speech, why the hell are you talking so long? You're absolutely right. My friend Michael Schwimmer.
Thank you so much. Thank you, John.
Kill him.
Yes. Ooh. Well, first, I'd like to start by thanking the Forum Club so much for inviting me to speak here today, and a special thanks to Mr. Michael Farr. As you'll hear later in the speech, I've been able to meet some really successful, innovative people. A lot of them know Mr. Farr, and I got to tell you, I don't know if I've met a man more universally beloved than that man. So thank you so much for that introduction. All right, for the next 30 to 35 minutes, I'm going to take you all on a roller coaster ride that has been my life and the life of Big League Advantage. First thing I think you should know about me is I am someone that has always asked the question, why? Why are things done the way they're done? How can we make them better? You know that like annoying 5, 6, 7-year-old kid that keeps asking? I'm 37, I haven't stopped yet, and I don't think I will. So when you have that personality type, two things happen. First, you make a lot of mistakes and you fail a lot more than most people. But second, you can come up with some really creative, innovative strategies to help your life, your business, and your organization move forward. And that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to tell you about my life as an athlete throughout those lenses. I'm going to tell you about the failures. I'm going to tell you about what I've learned, and I'm going to tell you about the successes. So I'm going to start. The year is 2003. I am the exact same age as these high school students that come walk across the stage. Senior year of high school, as Mr. Farr mentioned, I had Division I offers for football, basketball, and baseball. I was the best basketball player at the time of those three, but I felt as if baseball would give me the biggest potential to succeed, the highest likelihood to succeed professionally, and that's all I wanted to do. I wanted to be a professional athlete. I really didn't care the sport. I wanted to be a professional athlete from the first thought I can remember having, probably at the age of 5 or 6. So I attended the University of Virginia on a $3,000 baseball scholarship. The big reason I chose the University of Virginia was because the education I would get. See, my parents instilled three main values with me. First, get your education. What they told me was the better education you can get, the more opportunities and more optionality you will have in life. The more optionality you'll have in life, the more likely you will to find something to do that you love. And if you can do that, you will be a happy person. The second thing, the value of hard work. If you want something, if you want it to your core, you got to work for it. There are no shortcuts. You got to spend your waking hours doing things to help you achieve that dream. And third thing is, when you are doing something, do it with a purpose. The most valuable commodity you have in life is your time. And what they told me is that time, again, that time is very valuable. Do it with a purpose to try to improve and try to be great. So that's what I did. I went to the University of Virginia. I started studying all kinds of things. And what I fell in love with was predictive analytics. I loved it. I love the idea that you can assign probabilities to events that may or may not happen in the future and try to figure out ways in order to best quantify that. This took me to the finance space. I interned at a hedge fund at the University of Virginia called PAW Partners, where I was an analyst and I was a trader. Did pretty good work for them, so much so that the partner there told me he knew baseball was my dream, but he said, if baseball doesn't work out, you got a job here. And that was the first time I was able to take a big, deep breath in life. Like, I knew I was going to be okay. And that conversation indirectly and really directly helped me in my baseball life, because having that, knowing that background was there, I knew I can give everything to baseball. I didn't have to look over my shoulder, well, what if this doesn't work out? Because let me tell you, playing sports at the highest level, I don't know if it's the most, but it has to be one of the most competitive fields. How many people, in terms of how many people want to do it versus how many people actually do it. And so I graduated the University of Virginia and I was drafted by the Philadelphia Phillies in the 14th round of the baseball draft. Now, let me tell you two things about baseball that you may or may not know. First, there's 40 rounds in the draft. My signing bonus was $5,000. You hear, oh, this player signed for this, and millions of dollars. That's your first round picks, not the majority of us. All right? I would joke with my friends, like, you signed, like, you're picking up the bar tab. And I'm like, how much did you sign for? And I'd say, I signed for $3,200. But anyways, I get to the minor leagues, and my confidence sky high. Like, I just dominated ACC hitters. You know, I don't care about the numbers. I'm going to do this. 10 out of 10 confidence level. I get down to Clearwater, Florida, which is the spring training complex. I'm going to paint a picture for you. 7 mounds, throwing to 7 pitchers. I was the third wave, so 7 pitchers went, 7 more than I was up next. And I'm in here gung-ho. I'm sitting here ready, and I'm watching these pitchers throw. And my confidence went from 10 out of 10 to 0 out of 10 in a hurry. My heart sank to the ground. I am watching these players throw pitches that when the catcher catches it, it sounds like gunshots are throwing it so hard. I'm watching balls move like they're wiffle balls. I can't do any of this. It is very clear and obvious I'm in the bottom 10 percentile of talent. I'm in big trouble. I'm in big trouble. I'm flustered. I'm frazzled. I get home. I call my dad. I said, Dad, we got problems. This is going to be tough. Like if only 10% will play one day, because that's the second thing. Of all minor leaguers, only 10% will play one day in the major leagues. Not make a career, play one day. 9 out of 10 will fail. They will not make it. And here I'm looking. I'm starting off in the bottom 10 percentile of talent. This is a problem. So I call my dad. I tell him everything. I'm like, this is I don't know what to do. And he goes, I said, what do you think I should do, Dad? And he goes, well, from the sounds of it, I think you should quit. What? Everything that man has taught me in my life. Quit. This is everything I've ever wanted to do since my very first thought. What do you mean quit? And he goes, well, let me tell you something, son. I'll just listen to you talk. It sounds like you don't believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, I guarantee you nobody else will. And so what are you going to do? Spend 2, 3, 4 years grinding through the minor leagues, making $6,000 a year? That's what we made, $6,000 a year. Minor leaguers, no matter what. The first round pick, last round pick, $6,000 a year. Okay? You're going to do that? Now you're wasting 3 or 4 valuable years of your life you could spend in the working world. Like, why would you do that if you're not going to make it? I'm like, well, this is my dream. I got to try. I got to figure this out. And he goes, son, take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. Let me just tell you what to do here. I want you, when you're frazzled and you're flustered like this, is something, a lesson that I think everybody can learn, is simplify. Simplify. He's like, I don't know. He was a basketball player. He didn't know much about baseball. Because I don't know about your world, but what I do know is you've always been able to figure things out. Simplify the process. See if you can come up and create something that maybe they're not doing. I'm like, the game's been around for 100 years. What can I come up with that these pitchers haven't thought of? I'm like, well, if you can't, you're not going to make it. So you better try. I'm like, all right. So I started to simplify it. My job as a pitcher, what is my job? My job is to get that hitter out. Most people, how everybody does it, they do it with speed, with movement, with control. Can I throw it by you? Can I make it move where you can miss it? Or can I hit my spots perfectly? I was never going to make it doing that. I had no chance. Now, what did I have? I had 4 pitches, all way below average, but at least I had 4 of them, and I can throw them for strikes. And maybe I couldn't hit the corners, but I can get it over the plate. So I thought, well, if a hitter is always looking for a specific pitch and count, maybe there's patterns. Maybe I can use my education, build algorithms and models to try to figure out what hitters didn't want to see and consistently throw that pitch. And if I was always throwing what they didn't want to see, maybe I had a chance. So I went in the lab. I watched more film, and I worked harder than anybody around, studying hitters and building predictive models. And let me tell you, it worked. I struck out like 14 or 15 per 9 innings, a great metric for pitchers, and I was moving up. The second year in, probably the most important thing happened in my life, I met who would now be my wife. In the minor leagues, I was in AA. And she was a professional bodybuilder at the time, and she taught me about nutrition. I didn't know anything about nutrition. I was housing a pint of Ben and Jerry's every night. I didn't know, right? This was years now, 2011, right? And she's helping me out and doing all this stuff. And that's really another lesson I learned, is that it is so hard to become successful by yourself. I mean, I guess some people do it. People way smarter, better than me. Most people, like myself, need a team. You need people around you that will support you, that will help you get to where you want to go. She was one of the first people in my life to help me do that, help me nutrition, recovery. It was just amazing. And in August of 2011, my dream came true. I got called up to the major leagues. Not just called up to the major leagues, but called up to the Philadelphia Phillies, the best team in baseball at the time, a 101-win team. That team had over 10 players that had made over $100 million in their career on that same team. Amazing, right? My life had come to now. That's just the start, though. Now I got a pitch. I got to perform. Is this all going to work? And it did. And I was pitching well. 2012 comes in. I'm pitching well. I went a month and a half without giving up a run. I'm making hundreds of thousands of dollars more money than I ever thought of in my life. There's no stopping me. I'm going to make millions of dollars. I'm going to make tens of millions of dollars. I got an outside shot at making $100 million. And then snap. Just like that. Right shoulder. Labrum. Done. Just like that. Every hour that I have worked from age 5 years old, every thought that I could have that I wanted to do in my life, done in the blink of an eye. Just like that. There's an old saying that athletes die twice, once when their career's over and then once when they leave this earth. And that was very true for me. It was very, very true for me. I became lost. I got surgery, I started rehabbing. But all you can really do with rehab is about 2 hours a day. This left 14 waking hours for me to be with myself. I'm going to tell you, I fell into a state of depression. I did. I went home, and what did I do? I read every Game of Thrones book cover to cover. I wanted to be in some other fantasy land that didn't exist, right? I did this for months. I didn't, you know, when you're depressed a little bit, you don't know when you're in it, you know, but obviously looking back is very clear. So went over about 3 or 4 months till my wife gave me a speech I will never, ever forget. And I'm not going to use some of the expletives she used. But the summary was, I'm not going to sit here and watch you wallow in your own self-pity anymore. Like, I've let you do it for months. Like, that's enough. You know, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know. This is all I know. This is all I know. I love, like, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I don't know. She said, well, what do you love doing? What do you like doing? I'm like, well, I love sports. I love all sports. I like competition. I like trying to solve hard problems. I like trying to figure out a way to do things that maybe other people haven't thought of. She goes, okay. And then she asked me the most important question anyone's ever asked me in my life, and it is the start of Big League Advantage in the rest of my life. And she says, 3 words. What fulfills you? No one had ever asked me that before. What fulfills you? And I thought about it, and you know, pitching in the major leagues, 40,000 screaming fans, striking out the side, doing the best that I could, all my ideas working, coming to fruition. Man, did it feel good, let me tell you. The rush, it was amazing. But it wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't fulfilling. You know, playing golf, I played golf with Mr. Farr yesterday, you know, make a chip shot. That's an amazing feeling. That's great. It's not fulfilling, though. It's like, I don't know. And she goes, why don't you do this? Why don't you go back and take an inventory of your life? Go back from your first, you know, thought that you can remember, and don't just go by and like, oh, this happened. Really feel what you felt in those moments. Take a week and do it and go through your life. Take an inventory of your life and write down all the moments where you felt fulfilled. I did it. Had a pretty long list in there. Give you like a couple examples. When I was with the Phillies, I started a T-ball league with kids with special needs, specifically autism. A lot of family members I had are autistic, and I feel like those kids don't get a great shot at it, sports especially. It's hard. So I wanted to create a league that maybe they can play and have some fun. And it wasn't just seeing them have fun. It was watching their confidence grow in front of my eyes. Like, I know what they're doing. It doesn't matter they got on first base. It matters it's going to help them in life. It was my mom at age 10, 11, and 12, every Sunday morning taking the Sunrise facility, which is an elder folks facility, and going just playing Uno and playing cards with those people and just seeing how it helped them. That's the stuff that was fulfilling to me. So I had a full list, and everything was in common, which was helping other people was what was fulfilling to me. And I don't think that's different than the vast majority of people in this room. I think it's innate in all of us. I'm an optimist. What can I tell you? Right? And so I think somehow I've got a 9-year-old girl and a 5-year-old boy at home, and they love helping people. They love like friendships and all that stuff. And somehow we get older and somehow we lose that a little bit, I feel like. But now here having this moment, telling her this is what fulfills me. She said, all right, well, there's the thing. Why don't you find something to do that helps people, that is in sports, that's competitive, and that you're going to love? And I said, all right, challenge accepted. I'm going to see if I can do this. And so for the next months, I started thinking about things, all these thoughts running through my head, and 3 thoughts kind of kept coming to the top. One was I started studying how people become successful. How does Jeff Bezos become successful? Elon Musk become successful? Bill Gates become successful? Are there patterns I can see? And shockingly, they were very, very similar in terms of the patterns. And it was, you got somebody that is dedicated, that is driven, that wants to get to the top. Then you have a group of investors, right, that believe in these people, that give them money to help them succeed and get to that level. And in exchange for that, those entrepreneurs give up a percentage of their future earnings in that specific area. All the most successful people have done this. Like, that's very interesting. Conversation I had with Mr. Cole Hamels, who's a Cy Young winner, MVP in the Phillies World Series team. When I was there, he had signed a $144 million contract. And I, if you can't tell by my personality right now, I am not scared to ask people questions. And I asked him, I'm like, what does $144 million mean? I come from 2 middle-class parents. Like, what does that mean to have that kind of money? I was like, if you had made $134 million instead of $144, like, would that make any difference to you? And he looks me straight in the eyes and he goes, Schwimm, it would make zero difference in my life if I had 134 or 100. I would live my life no different. There's nothing I can do with 144 that I can't do with 134. It's like, that's interesting. That's interesting. Okay. And then I thought about the 9 out of 10. These are my people. These are my friends. These are people I love that didn't make it, that spend 2, 3, 4, 5 years in the minor leagues. They get cut. They don't make it. They got to enter the real world at age 27, 28, whatever it is, wife, kids, what, you know, nobody, here's a secret. Nobody cares. They don't. And it's sad. Like, how can we put all these ideas together? And that was the beginning of what will become Big League Advantage. This was the idea. What if I could build a model, create a valuation metric for all 7,000 minor leaguers, offer players money to help them achieve their dream, give them every inch to get there, right? In exchange, if they do make it, they do make that $144 million. Now it's only $134 or whatever it is, because we would get whatever percentage that the player wanted to do. This was the idea. This was the concept. So I did it. I went and started building this model, this algorithm out. I thought it was going to take me 2 months, maybe three. Nope. I wanted more, more, more. It wasn't good enough. Wasn't good enough. 13 months of 14 to 16 hours a day is what it took. With my wife, pregnant as all get out, doing manual entry, helping me. That's what it took. Until we finally got it 13 months later, I'm looking at the back test and I'm saying, hallelujah. Like, this is, I knew it. I knew for a fact this was going to work. Now, I didn't know if we could get a business started or anything, but I knew if we could, this would work, right? So now I had to call my friends from the University of Virginia, and I had to get, like, how do you write a business plan? How do you come up with financials? I have no idea. And they helped me, right? They helped me, because if you do right by people, they do right by you. And they helped me build all this thing. So I got it all ready. I'm going in talking to investors like, this is going to work. Again, confidence is at a 10 out of 10. And guess what I heard? And you all can probably guess it. No, 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 no. I'm like, oh, God, what am I doing here? So I go and I start, you know, when I get a no, I was always super thankful for the meeting. But like, why? Like, why don't you want to invest in this so I can be better, right? And there's some things I couldn't control. Here's what I couldn't control. When they would tell me, well, you're 28 years old. You have zero business experience. You never took a business class, an accounting class, a legal class. You're trying to start a company. You're trying to raise $26 million in an idea and a concept that had never been started before. Yeah. I can't change that. I can't change that. But then they would leave these little pieces of information. Well, I didn't invest because of this, 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 this. And what I found out was I wasn't talking to them the right way. I was talking to them on the athlete side. These are finance people. I need to learn how to speak the finance language. I have to use words like, you know, this is an uncorrelated investment to the market. Things like that, right? Well, I didn't know that at the time, right? I didn't know that's what people wanted, was assets that were completely and totally uncorrelated to the market, right? And so I had to learn how to speak this way, but I kept getting no. Now, keep in mind, we're 3 years in. We're out of money. I've got a one-year-old baby girl. Sell everything we have. I'm moving with my parents. Moving my parents. Like, I go ahead and tell my wife, I'm like, look, I know this is going to work, but I don't think I can raise, like, it's hard. I haven't raised anything yet. You know, I've raised a few commitments for a few, you know, a couple hundred thousand, maybe a couple million bucks. I need $26 million. This has to be big enough to where we have enough sample size, right, with enough players. And she said, hey, we've been broke before. You know, how much money you have and how happy you are, they're not necessarily correlated. We're okay. As long as we have each other and we have our family, we're okay. I know that you have to go give this a shot, because if you don't give this everything you have, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life. That's what she told me. Talk about having a team that believes in you. So I did. So I went 31 cities in the next 62 days talking to people. I started getting a couple yeses, but all for the minimum. About a couple years in, I had raised about $5 million, but I was going. And I, every network, anybody I can talk to, I would. And then finally, the big break happened. I met a man by the name of Bill Miller, formerly of Legg Mason. Some of you in the room may know him. He wrote a very big check. And then the rest was history. We had raised our first fund. It was amazing, right? But it was just like getting called up to the major leagues. You're there, but you haven't done anything yet. And so I thought it would take 5 years to allocate this money. It took only 1.5 years to allocate all $26 million. We invested in 77 players. Now, claim to fame here on the company, 83% of those 77 were outside the top 300 prospects when we invested in them. Nobody's. These are players, remember I told you 10%. That includes the first round picks, second round picks, et cetera. These guys have 1, maybe 2% to make it. Meaning of the 77, maybe we should have 3 or 4 make it, right? Looking back now, 51 of the 77 have made the major leagues. That's how much this money has helped them grow. The combination of the analytics, combination of the money we give them, combination of the network around, we can help them be great. Now, guess what? Fundraising was pretty easy now. Now we got to fund two, much bigger fund. Here comes 2018, but now I want to build this thing out. I don't want this to be baseball. I want to help athletes everywhere, and I want to figure out how we can help teams win games. And so we brought on this data analytic team, and I brought in a group of some of the smartest people. That's one of the things I've been really good at, is bringing in people, everybody that comes to Big League Advantage. If you meet somebody that works at Big League Advantage, I promise you one thing, they're a lot smarter than I am. Hire people that are a lot smarter than you, right? And they're able to figure these things out. And so we put together this test. About 2,000 people have attempted this test. Only 50 have been able to pass it. We hired 33 on the analytic team. It's very hard thing to do because they don't teach it necessarily in school. They're teaching data science to build the next, groom the next person to work at Uber, Facebook, Google, all these companies. Well, sports is different. You know, you don't have beautiful data, you know, trillions of rows, all these things. It is small sample size, messy data, and you have to create models with imperfect information. We don't want the robot data scientist, we want the jazz musician data science. We want the data scientist that says, hey, look, there's issues with the data, but I did this random forest model, I coded this in Python, did this, and I got this type of result. That's our people, right? And so we brought on this group, and the one thing that I did that I am so proud of is probably the smartest business decision I made was every single person at Big League Advantage that comes and works for us is an equity partner. Every single one, the highest man, the lowest man on the totem pole. Because I don't want to work for anybody ever, and I don't want anybody to work for me. I want to work with people. I think you get the best results. You don't have to worry about it. I have to go in and talk to these guys. Hey, you're working too hard. Slow down. That's my problem. They get too obsessive with it. Hey, go camping for a couple days and come back to this problem. Because when they're all on the same side of the rope and we're all working together, great things can happen. And we brought on the team. We did basketball. We did football. Our basketball model became truly remarkable. And we were able to find things out in basketball that nobody had been doing before. And who found out about us but Coach Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K, Duke basketball, the greatest basketball coach by any quantifiable metric. We did a presentation for him in 2019. Comes to me and goes, what you're doing at Big League Advantage, we're going to hire you because what you're doing, like, I need to learn from you. I'm like, what? He's been coaching for 4 decades. He's been coaching since before I was born. He's saying he wants to learn from us, and let that be a lesson to the greatest to ever do it in his mid-70s, saying, I want to learn. I want to get better. We're going to learn way more from him than he is from us, but yeah, that's the nature of the beast, right? We got in there. We went to the practice. I got to see how he runs his entire organization, every practice, how he does it, and we answered all the questions for him. Hey, lineup analysis against this roster. If they bring in this sub, what's our best performance? Hey, this scouting report here. Hey, this recruit, who's better, this or that? And we went and we did it for him. We answered his questions. Beautiful, beautiful relationship. Love that man. But I wanted a little bit more. I wanted a different feel to see how other teams did it. Enter Nate Oates, the head coach of Alabama basketball. Nate Oates is an 11-year math teacher, so I knew we'd be best friends to start. And he saw the game differently. He played a different kind of basketball. And I'm like, this guy knows a lot of the stuff we know. Like, let's work together. We came in. He's like, I want you guys over the entire operation. Everything we touch, you have to touch. From recruiting, transfer portal, play style, lineups, who should come in, subs, all of it. You're doing all of it. Okay, you got it, coach. We bring in 2 years ago, we bring in a player that was ranked like 60 in the country at the time, but we had him as the number one recruited player in the country, Brandon Miller. He ends up being the number two overall pick in the draft of the Hornets. Last year's Alabama team, for the first time in school history, was number one in the country. First time in school history. But here's the problem. We lost 4 of our best players. Only one guy came back. He comes to me, he's from, what do we do here? We got a roster. We got to compete. I said, how crazy do you want to be, coach? He's like, if the data supports it, let's do it. I'm like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get some transfers in. I want this kid from North Dakota State. I want this kid from Cal State Fullerton, Ohio University, Wofford, and Hofstra. Because what our analytics say is the play style of these 5 individuals, if they come together, their chemistry on the court, they will make each other so much better, and we can create a squad from all these people that nobody thinks are very good. Of course, he calls them up. They come on the team. I sit in front of you today. Alabama basketball has the number one offense in college basketball, and they are number one in the SEC as we speak from a bunch of misfits. Look what modeling can do. look what our team can figure this stuff out in years and years of hard work, wanting to do this, building a team. Now we're doing personality tests, leadership tests, all these things. Then who comes knocking on the door? The San Francisco 49ers. Hey, Schwimm, we're building San Francisco Enterprises out. We want to buy a team in England called Leeds United, a soccer team. You think you can help? Yes, sir, we can. But I want to be an equity partner. You got it. We worked out the deal. Right? So now we're helping a team that's in the second division try to get promoted to the first. As we sit right now, there's about a 60-40 chance on the good side they're going to get promoted. We'll see. It's a long season left. But I leave you with two things, two last things, why I tell you all of this. One is look at the flywheel effect that can happen. High school kids, look at this. It comes from one question, three words. That sparks an idea. That idea, is there a solution? If you work so hard, you can create. Then it's just baseball. But then, now you can be smarter. You can grow. All these different angles, all these spokes can come off just the one flywheel. And then two, and definitely most important, I promise you this, you high school kids, I promise you this, you will, life isn't all sunshine and rainbows, you will get into a dark space at some point in your life. Someone's going to hit you over the head. You're not going to expect it. And you're going to, hopefully it's not close to the spot I was in, but it's not going to be great. Okay? And if you can simplify, if you can simplify and figure out what fulfills you and start to do that, if you had told me in that time that that moment, me breaking my shoulder, would be the best thing that ever happened to me, I would have told you you're insane. And it really was. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. I prefer this life than if I was a Hall of Fame baseball player 100 times out of 100. You just never know in your life. It takes time. And so thank you guys very much for letting me speak here today. I really appreciate it.
Okay. By the way, for any of you who don't remember me, I'm Joe Fogg. I used to be a president here. So that was excellent, Michael. Really, really good. I have no blue cards, none of the students. They're coming, okay, because we want to get them in. Okay, first question. How are you harnessing AI in your predictive analysis?
Yeah, so, well, it depends on the sport. Like for basketball, for example, we have every shot ever, every player's ever taken from age 15 years old and on. Okay, so let's just start with that. So we have this gigantic data source of all that information. Because they all play against each other in the AAU events, so we have opponent adjustments and all of those things. We then take that and we look back historically over 15 years. What skill sets matter at what age levels? Like if you're a really good shooter but not good at the rim at age 15, is that good? Is that not good? So we test all these theories out. So now we have every different skill set. There's 66 skill sets in our basketball model and an age curve for each of them and where every player is on all of them. Right, and then of course you can figure out how those fit to other players, et cetera, right? And you can do that by these, you know, we all code in the same coding language. This might get a little bit too technical, but it's called Python, and therefore everybody can work on everybody's model at the same time. There's other languages, R, Java, like a bunch of other languages where it's basically your own individual model. So when you create these models that everybody can work on, you know, you can really create a big advantage.
Okay, next question. Do you think your model would work for other sports or industries? Why or why not?
It depends. It depends on where the data is coming for and the data integrity. For example, golf is a sport I think we'd be really good at, but the data is terrible. So like for golf, for those of you who play golf, for the AJGA events, like the junior events, right, we know that the 16-year-old made a par. But we don't know, did he drive it 310 yards, then hit a 40-yard shot, then two putt from 2 feet, or did he hit it a drive that was 180 yards? The key is the process. The key is never the result. It's how you get to the result. How you get to it is going to be predictive or unpredictive in terms of future success. So it all depends on the data set. Now, I think what we do is just the beginning. I think, you know, we had a student talk about art and graphic design in here. Like, I think you can do this stuff for artists, for paintings. I think you can do a lot of this stuff. Now, I think it'll be other people that are a lot smarter than I am to create and do this stuff that have more domain knowledge in those areas. But I do think it's very possible.
Okay. What percent of your players regret signing with your organization when they become successful?
It's a great, great, great question. And I think it's very, very similar you know, to real world, right? Like when the original investors invested in Jeff Bezos, you know, like, do you think Jeff Bezos is upset on some of those? Maybe, maybe not, right? Now, he's got some great quotes in there about how they deserve it. They believed in me when nobody else does. We have over 600 players we've done deals with. Over 600 players. Over 10% of all current major leaguers did a deal with us in the minor leagues. We've had two issues. It's not bad. It's two more than I want to have, but we've had two issues so far.
Okay. Come on, you guys are out of time. Get those up.
Well, I'll expand on one other thing about that. It's about how you talk to the players. So when I talk to the players and I do these presentations for them, I tell them, I'm like, don't assume you're not going to make it. We know if you don't make it, this will be the greatest deal you do. Assume you're going to make it. Assume you're going to be great. Assume you're going to make that $150 million. But now instead you got $140. If you're going to be upset with that, do not do this deal. Because I don't ever want you to do a deal that you're going to regret later. We tell every player that. So I think that's important in how the messaging comes across to the player.
All right, here's the first blue card, student question. What do you see in the future of sports for students of our age? Not Ooh. My age, their age.
I think the future of sports is extremely bright as an industry. I think for your age, the more computer science classes, really almost any industry, is going to be helpful to you. But I also think that you're going to see a lot more in sports with a lot more benefits to players in like sports psychology, if you're interested in that. There's all different types of, like, NBA does better than baseball right now. The baseball is not that many resources for you. Basketball has like two coaches per player. Baseball has like two coaches for 26 players. You know, so I think there's a lot of nutrition. We had another student talk about sports medicine. Great. Like, we need as many of those people as we can get.
Okay, here's a question from Michael Farr, our host, who has left for better invitation, apparently. Can you describe something specific you have recently done with Alabama basketball?
I know the story he wants me to tell on this. So very recently, they just played Auburn, their biggest rival. And they have a different substitutions pattern in Auburn. So I'm out here at my home in D.C. doing all the substitutions. So I'm texting an assistant coach relays to the coach, and that's how all the subs happen, which is a wild thing. So I'm sitting here doing all that. We have like all our monitors, like all the players' heart rates, everything that's going on, so we can predict over the next 3 minutes if they're going to perform better or not, what lineups they're better or not against. So I'm doing this whole thing. I'm going in, and then all of a sudden I get my 9-year-old comes in crying because she had a nightmare. I'm like, my, you got to get homework in here. But that's real life of being a parent and having kids, right? But that was, he found that story funny and wanted me to share it. So there it is.
All right, another student question. In your field, do you have any competition? And if so, what makes your company different? Or how do you want to improve it?
I want there to be as much competition as possible because I want players to have the resources it can have. I started this to help athletes. And the more people that come in and do it, the better. For me, 7 years, there hasn't been any. I don't think there ever will be. Especially for the lower minor leagues, it is the amount of the mathematical advantage. A is like our moat, as you want to call it, the mathematical advantage, and then how we talk to players and our relationship. Players that do deals with us love us. Like, we don't even go to players anymore. It's the players come to us because they're so happy with the deal. They're so happy with the network we provide them. Again, even if that player that makes it is great, he's thankful because he knows that we helped him become great. And if you have that constant effect, you know, it's hard for somebody to come in and do that. There's a couple companies that tried. Like, four people at Goldman Sachs quit and tried to do it. They, 6 months later, folded up shop. They couldn't sign anybody.
Okay. How have changes in the NIL rules affected your business?
Great question. A lot. We went from being able to do just baseball to now all sports, right? So now college football becomes the minor leagues for the NFL. See, right now, baseball professionally was the only sport with, like, a minor league system. Because if you're the first-round pick of the NFL, you're in the league, right? But now colleges, and the math is scarily identical. Less than 10% of all college football players in the Power Five will play one day in the NFL. Same in basketball. So you have the same problem, again, with now colleges as the minor leagues, and so we can do that.
Okay. Here's another student question. Could the data you use for basketball and baseball apply to tennis as well?
Yes. So we do have enough information for tennis. The problem is,
not very many good American tennis players make a lot of money. So a lot of the good tennis players come from overseas. So now this is really a question of our bandwidth. Do we have enough time to check Serbian law and like for our contracts and then Argentinian law, like have to go all do that. So we have not entered that space yet, but the data is there. So the data is there, we can do it. We can do predictive analysis. It's the lead, it's the all the back office stuff. But you know, as a company, if there's possibly a private equity person could come in, give us a lot more capital, we can start doing a lot more of that stuff.
Okay, this is the last question I've got. While helping people succeed, how do you overcome the challenge if your analysis or your plan doesn't work and they don't succeed?
Yeah, that'll happen to 7 or 8 out of 10. 7 or 8 out of 10, like we are going to be wrong a lot more than we're going to be right. But at least those players know they did everything they could, and at least we know we did everything we could. Very similar to venture investing, right? Imagine if you had 10 stocks, but you knew Google was in there somewhere, right? You're going to do okay. So if like an investor standpoint, it's fine. And look, like I go to all our investors and I said, hey, look, you can put your money in some Morgan Stanley, no offense there, but yeah, any fund you want. If you make money, great. If you don't, great. At least with us, if you don't make money, it means you're changing people's lives.
Okay. Do you sign individuals or only teams?
No, we only sign individuals. When we're investing in the future earnings of athletes, it's all individuals. There's a separate business line technically here called Sports Analytic Advantage. So Big League Advantage does all the investments. Sports Analytic Advantage does Duke Basketball, Bam Basketball, Leeds United, and we're in talks with a couple other teams to do some things on that side of it. But we're very picky on the teams that we, you know, want to deal with because we like that. You know, teams are managed really, really poorly in general. Wait, so.
I see one more question coming up here. Thank you. I can't barely read this.
Let me try. Your system sounds a lot like Moneyball 2.0. Who will play you in the movie version of your story?
I couldn't read it.
I can tell you, it's up to my wife. It'd be Ryan Reynolds. That I can tell you for sure. But ironically, Paul DePodesta, so the Jonah Hill character in the movie, the real, this guy's named Paul DePodesta, he helped me start the company. He was an equity partner in it. So we actually worked together in the very beginning of this thing.
Okay, so we've exhausted the questions. That's it, Michael. That was terrific.
Thank you very much.
Very well done. Really enjoyed meeting you. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, we stand adjourned.
Thank you.
I grew up in Florida. I should have known that I could tell you some stories about the Phillies.